Thank you very much, JP. Thanks for the kind introduction. I am so glad to be with you today. Sometimes, I mean, you don't know this, but sometimes I think the amount of information that we have that where we could talk about how to heal your body is so vast and so great that sometimes I go, okay, how can I narrow it down to what I'm thinking about today? Well, I thought about a situation that I had yesterday, and I want to share that with you just briefly. And by the way, the number here at the station, it's 903-586-5257. Hopefully, I'll be able to take calls pretty soon. That way, somebody's already calling. Well, let's go ahead and take the phone call, okay? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is about blood clots. I've had a deep vein clot in my left leg, and it's been 6 months I've been on Coumadin. I don't really
Was this following COVID?
No.
Okay.
Well, it wasn't COVID-related as far as I know. It was last November that I got it. And I haven't
had
COVID.
The reason I asked that is because I just read an article stating that one of the long-term consequences from the long haulers that have COVID is clots.
That's my only angle. I didn't even have the vaccinations at that point.
Okay. All right. So you've got a deep vein clot. Is that right?
Yes. It's a distal, and this is my third one. But the first two were after knee surgery.
Okay.
This one was no related injury of any kind.
Most likely one of the things that happened was when they did the knee surgery, they gave you an intravenous antibiotic during the surgery. Did they tell you that?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they did.
Okay. Okay, so this clot is following the knee surgery, is that correct?
No, this was 2 years after the last knee surgery.
Okay, 2 years after. Well, that's what I meant to say. I just kind of I didn't word it very right.
All right.
All right. Well, what does your doctor say about the clot? What's his solution to take care of it?
Oh, well, she just wanted me to be on lifelong Coumadin, and I didn't want to do that. So now she's told me this week after an ultrasound cleared me just to take 325 milligrams of aspirin. I'm not too cool with that either.
I don't have the article right in front of me, but I want to say it came out of the University of Houston. And if I had a computer in front of me right now, I'd probably try to look it up to see if I could give you a reference point. Because what you do is if you read an article about how there's a natural substance that helps dissolve a blood clot, then you go, okay, well, that may not be relevant to me, but that may be relevant to my Aunt Jane. And so if your name is Aunt Jane, then apply this information to you. And so in this article, I'm just going to tell you in simplicity what it said. And, of course, with the First Amendment, we have freedom of speech. You know I'm not in a position where I can overpromise. I'm not telling you to stop taking Coumadin. I didn't tell you to stop taking the doctor's requirements for aspirin. I didn't tell you any of those things. Mm-hmm. But in this study, what they looked at is they looked at one substance. It's called hawthorn. You ever heard of hawthorn?
I heard you talk about that before, and I actually purchased some hawthorn berries. I haven't taken any yet.
Okay. Do you remember what I spoke of with hawthorn? Was it clots or was it something else?
It was clots, but it was about dissolving. I'm looking at hopefully preventing one, too.
Well, do you have which one are you after? Are you wanting to prevent clots or dissolve the one that you have?
The one I have is gone, according to ultrasound, this week, but I want to prevent another.
Oh, and I see where you're coming from. I didn't follow you. I just thought you had a clot right now. I got that totally wrong.
No, that's okay. It's been 6 months out, and I'm clear of that.
Well, let me say this differently then.
Okay.
Hawthorn, if it's very, very effective at dissolving clots, maybe we could look at studies and show where it is actually very good at improving blood flow. Now, as a general rule, the faster that the blood flows through your body, that's where a person has more life. The slower that blood flows, that's where you have more clot formation.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that I usually say this is, when your blood flows at a high rate of speed, meaning it's normal speed, your blood's clean. But if it slows down, it becomes dirty. Now, you know how I usually use this? If I did a simple screening test called an elemental hair analysis, they do a good job of screening you for toxic metals. Well, there's one of those metals that it will make your blood thick and dirty. It's called aluminum.
Uh-huh.
So if a person says, you know what, I love this aluminum cookware I have. It's just the best. It's so light, I don't have to drop it. Well, The problem is, every time that you put tomatoes, which is an acid food, next to the aluminum, it's going to leach some of the aluminum into the food. Or if you drink soft drinks from aluminum can, I'm not saying you do, but you get the gist of it. But aluminum is one of those metals that when it gets into the human body, oh, does it make the blood thick and dirty. And so one of the things that counters that is magnesium. So if I had to just choose two elements from nature that God's designed to keep your blood clean, it had to be potassium and magnesium.
Okay. I do take 400 milligrams of magnesium. I've heard you talk about magnesium.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a very good choice. Good job.
But I can't find that on shelves, the lactate. It's always the something else.
Well, even the other day, I was looking at the absorption rates in the bloodstream from magnesium citrate, magnesium citrate malate, glycinate. Let me see, what was the other one? I think it was magnesium threonate. Anyway, but looking at the magnesium oxide is just horrible, by the way. That would work great as a sunscreen, but not as a nutrient. But they showed that magnesium lactate was at the top of the pecking order as far as absorption in the bloodstream. And so when you have magnesium, you tend to hold more oxygen in your blood. And that's what you want. You're not better off by having less oxygen. You want more oxygen. And oxygen might be the very substance that would dissolve blood clots. I know if somebody had a bad case of the bends and they couldn't move, it'd be pure oxygen in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber. That'd be the source right there. So magnesium lactate, it is available. You just might have to Google it and come
How
up with...
How much dosage do you recommend?
Well,
or would you take...
Usually what a person is going to deal with is their own unique biochemical individuality. Some people might do really well with 300 to 400 milligrams a day, but there may be another person, because of the stress they have in their life and maybe because of the heavy, heavy workload. I mean, you do know that there's people out there, they have to work 14 hours a day just to make it.
Thankfully, I'm not one of those.
Okay. Well, for those people, it may take 800 milligrams just to meet their requirements and meet their needs. But that's the choice here. If you take magnesium, it's going to help support your body by increasing the amount of oxygen in the blood. It increases the blood flow, helps the heart work better. Now, let me give you a flip side of the coin.
Okay.
Like right now, I can't even tell my heart's working. I can't. I don't feel it. It's not fluttering around. It's not beating hard. Have you ever had your heart beat hard before?
No, not really. Okay. My heart checked out great about a year ago.
Oh, no, and that's really, really good, because that's the next thing that I think of. There's a mineral in nature called potassium. And potassium is one of those things that most people don't get enough of. So if a person says they can feel their heart beating, that's usually a potassium deficiency. Or if they have continual cramps in their feet and their calves, that could be potassium or magnesium. Mm-hmm. Usually the greater the severity, I tend to go toward magnesium. If somebody has a real severe calcium deficiency, oh my goodness, they will lock up with a Charlie horse that never goes away. It's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're prone to clotting, what we got to do is we got to make sure that you're optimally nutritionally supplemented here. So potassium, magnesium, hawthorn, cod liver oil, I would say vitamin C. Garlic, in my mind, is one of the greatest herbal blood thinners of all time. But then again, if I start tackling, I got an article in front of me about garlic and autoimmune diseases of the pancreas. I'm sure that's going to interest a lot of people, especially since it comes from Poland. I'm looking at the Polish Journal of Pathophysiology. But anyway, those are things you're looking at, but it's still your duty to keep your body moving. So the more that you move your body, the better you have blood flow and oxygenation and nutrient delivery. And you start cleaning out gunk in your blood.
All right.
So there you go.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Bless
bye-bye.
You. Okay.
Yesterday morning, a woman walked in my door, and in her possession, she had under her arm three books. And I want to say one of the books, the title was called Mastering Leptin. That's a good book. I've read that before. I like it. And it's about the ins and outs of what happens when your fat cells produce leptin, or the lack thereof. Anyway, so that was one of them. Another book was about... I want to say it was a take on how do you take care of anxiety and depression. and I totally forget the title, but it had a picture of a purple cauliflower that made up a brain on the front cover. I know that doesn't tell you what the title is. I'm sorry for forgetting. Now, what was the third one? The third one was about rats. I can't remember now. But anyway, here's what struck me. I think she had a concern that maybe it was a little bit too much, and I'm going, no. This is good. The fact that she's carrying books, she's trying to study so she can gain wisdom and knowledge and insight on what to do to help herself and to help those that are around her. I mean, she's like a great woman. She cares about her children. She cares about the well-being of her husband and the grandkids and her own children and the people around her. She just loves everybody. She's like an amazing person. And so I don't get on people like that like sometimes other professions do, and they say, no, don't study anything. Just take our word for it. We're going to tell you what drugs to take. Anyway, everybody's got their own ability to choose on what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. But here's a story she told me. And I haven't looked this up yet, but I find it, I mean, I totally believe her, but I find it so, so interesting. She said there was a study where they followed Indians that had obviously immigrated from India to Great Britain. And these Indians, their dietary choice was to be vegan or vegetarian. And I don't know the ins and outs of what that meant, but I'm assuming that meant they did not eat steak or brisket or ground beef or sausage, okay? And so she was telling me that their diets did not change at all once they moved from India to Great Britain. But what happened was their health began to suffer tremendously. And so what this lady was telling me was when they were in India, they would go to the garden and they would remove whatever vegetable they were going to eat. Look, can I just use a cucumber as an example? And so they would just wash the dirt off the cucumber and they would eat it. They didn't add any vegetable wash to it. They didn't soak them in bleach. They didn't scrub them with soap and water. They didn't spray them with a chemical to prevent spoilage. There was no pesticide, insecticide, chemical residue anywhere. Anyway, I'm kind of going overboard on that. But when they got to Great Britain, all of a sudden now, they didn't have access to the vegetables that were just dirt and water cleansing. What they did was they went to the grocery store, and so you know how sometimes you go to the grocery store and you might find a vegetable that's coated in a layer of wax. Well, that's chemicals. And their health began to suffer. They began to develop obesity, problems related to excess inflammation. It's just such an interesting conversation. And so she was saying that was the only difference. And I tell her, I said, this is so interesting you should bring this up, because the other day I was reading an article about how do you encourage great health. And one of the ways, and of course I know I'm jumping around here, but one of the, when they look at older people that live a long time and they seem to have very few health problems and they can maintain their health, well, guess what hobby or activity they usually have? I mean, meaning the ones that do the best and live the longest with the fewest problems. Well, gardening, okay? Doesn't take a genius to figure out that they got their hands in the dirt and they're touching bushes and leaves and trees, and they're probably laying in the grass and they're pulling weeds up by hand, probably without gloves on. It's probably the way it should be. So my point is, if you're gardening, you're outside in the fresh air. You're in nature. You get the radiant energy of the sun striking your skin. Now, I realize there's some people that are in a situation where they don't have great access to sunshine. I'm sorry, and I wish more for them, but I'm not in charge, and I wish they had more sunshine. But also, when you're outside, there's something about cortisol levels tend to lower, okay? And you get to move your body probably a bit more. And probably the work that you're engaged in, while it's good, healthy exercise, it probably doesn't even feel like exercise. It probably feels like fun. And you probably get to become entertained by birds and animals and insects, and you get to have all this good stimulus. Anyway, there's probably just like a whole lot to it that I haven't figured out yet. I just know that it's healthy to be outside in the garden. And chances are that if you're into gardening, you might actually start eating some of this produce that you're growing yourself, and you may just be like those Indians that, or the people from India that just washed the dirt off and ate them right there on the spot. They didn't try to use chemicals to sterilize the plants. You get where I'm coming with this? And so as I start reading articles like this, I go, okay, this is very, very interesting. But one of the tidbits of information I came across was that people that tend to stay indoors more than those that are out, compared to those that are outdoors, like getting their hands dirty, if you're out in the dirt, you tend to have the very best possible gut microbiome. Do you know what that means? So if you have 35 to 37 or 38 trillion cells that make up the entire human body, that's called you. I'm talking about the cells that make up your hair to the bottom of your toes or bottom of your feet and all the organs and glands and tissues in between. That's 37 trillion. If they were to give a rough estimate of the amount of bacteria that live on your skin and in your nose and your mouth and behind your ears and the folds of your skin, but the big source of bacteria is going to be all those germs that live in your gut. That's called your microbiota. Sometimes it's called microbiome. If you want to use the word flora, hey, I'm game. I like all of those terms. However you relate to the living bacteria that live inside of you, that's fine by me. Okay? And so when somebody spends time and they get their hands dirty and they touch dogs or cats or they have bunny rabbits, or some people are highly affectionate with their chickens, meaning the moment they go outside, the chickens come over and they want to be stroked and caressed and talked to and petted and say, man, you're doing such a good job eating all those June bugs and earthworms and everything else that they eat, caterpillars. Yeah, chickens are doing a world of good. Now, they poop everywhere. Wait. We can't talk about that. Never mind. So when you're outside and you touch all these things that are, quote, dirty, those people, they tend to really have the best gut microbiome. And that's what controls everything. There's more of them, the bacteria that live inside of you, than there are cells that make up you. Now, let me give you an idea here, and I think this is about as accurate as I can make it. I'm just going to try to make it sound simple. Your fortunes when it comes to your health is going to be based to the largest degree on the numbers of good, beneficial bacteria that live inside of you. Now, let me give you kind of a drastic example. I've discussed this before, but we're going to discuss it one more time because I want you to get it. In the year 2005, they started a very interesting study in the country of Poland. Now, I know what you're thinking. Should we even pay attention to a study from Poland? Yes, you should. Polish people are great people. I was just trying to make a Polish joke. Sorry. Forgive me. But no, this is excellent. What they found in the study was they signed up people that had amazingly great health. They weren't taking drugs of any kind. There was no drug abuse whatsoever. They had no health problems. And to be in the study, as long as you were perfectly healthy, you were radiant and strong, you had amazing health, you couldn't be on any drugs, and you couldn't have had any type of surgery like bypass surgery or cancer surgery, stuff like that. And so in the study, they followed people all the way from, I think, 18 years of age, maybe up to 87. I think that was the oldest man in the study. And I think they had like 387 people. If I get the number wrong on that, forgive me, but that's pretty close to it. So in this study, all they asked and requested was, could they have a stool specimen from these individuals once for each quarter of the year? So that's four times a year, and they followed them for 5 years. And in the study, the only thing that they were really after, which I like it, is they were trying to name and identify the good species of bacteria that would colonize the gut or colonize the human body. And so at the end of 5 years, they said, okay, what have we discovered here? And they said that these people that are extremely radiant and healthy, they're well balanced, they function at a high level. Everyone would like to have their level of health. They noticed that they tended to harbor about 1,050 unique individual species of good bacteria. Now, when I say good bacteria living in your gut, what would be some of the things that good bacteria do? Well, number one, they make vitamins for you. Have you ever heard of vitamin B12? Well, it's made by good friendly bacteria that live in your body. So if somebody was suffering from, say, a vitamin B12 deficiency, well, one of the things that we should take a look at is maybe they don't have enough good beneficial bacteria. Good bacteria also, they help maintain balance of female hormones. They also help break down toxic waste that if they didn't break it down, it could actually be very toxic and harmful to you. I mean, would you like to have a septic system in your backyard or an aerobic system that would break down toxins from the waste that goes through there? Of course you would. All right? They help make sure that your body is extremely healthy and happy, which I don't know if you've heard this before. And this is the joke that she and I had together. She said, you know, I've heard that the gut's the second brain. And she goes, maybe I think it's the first brain. I'm going, yeah, I think you're right, too. Because your enteric nervous system is found in your small intestine. And if your gut is a really, really happy place for these good microbes to live, well, number one, you try to create the environment for lots of good bacteria to live in your gut. They're going to be there anyway. And if it's a healthy environment, well, it's probably because the bacteria are secreting and producing all these nutrients that we need anyway to be radiant and strong and healthy and bless and benefit the world. And so these 387 individuals, not one of them died during the study over 5 years, which I find amazing. And at the end of 5 years, they said, okay, here's what we're finding. These healthy people, human beings, they have 1,050 good species or colonies of individual bacteria that are setting up shop in the gut, making the person healthy. Okay? Well, they did that on the flip side of the coin. Here's what the parallel study was. They took a whole bunch of individuals. It was over 400 to start with. Not that many made it through. But they took people that had morbid obesity, people that had type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes. And like you understand how that works. Some people have a very mild form of diabetes, and some people have a more severe one. Okay? They included people in the study that had heart disease, everything from congestive heart failure to arrhythmias to this heart problem to that heart problem, but basically their hearts weren't working efficiently and they weren't healthy. Then they had a group of people that had autoimmune diseases, and I don't really remember all of them, but let's just say lupus, Hashimoto's, rheumatoid, eczema, psoriasis, vitiligo, stuff like that. And they even had some people that had severe forms of arthritis, which in a roundabout way is probably autoimmune in nature also. And they followed them also for 5 years, and they made the same request. Give us 4 stool specimens, and then we're going to monitor them. So at the end of the 5 years, they noticed the people that had all the health issues, they only harbored about 700 unique species of bacteria. Now, I'm not trying to make this more complicated than what I should or am, but here's the punchline right here. There was one unique follow-up study where they were able to contact 17 women that experienced morbid obesity. Okay? I think I was in Walmart one day this week, and there was a woman that was on one of those motorized shopping carts. And it was completely out of necessity, so I'm very thankful they have those there for people to shop so they can take care of themselves. But it didn't take a genius to figure out that it would have been super, nearly painfully impossible for her to walk from the parking lot to the back of the store to get whatever food she needed in the refrigerated section. She just couldn't do it. The pain would be too great on her knees and hips and ankles and feet. Anyway, so what they did was they contacted 17 women that had experienced morbid obesity. We're talking about these women are really suffering. And what impresses me more than anything else about this particular study was they didn't, A, attempt to do any psychological counseling by saying, did you know that you're eating emotionally when you're stressed here? They didn't do any of that stuff. They didn't make one attempt or effort to change anything that they were doing. They didn't say, stop eating Doritos or ramen noodles. I did notice that the woman in her shopping cart, I'm just being observant, I'm not judging anybody here, that metal basket on that motorized shopping cart, or if you want to call it a motorized shopping cart wheelchair, that's fine. It was just ramen noodles. You know what I mean by ramen noodles? You just pour the hot water over them. Okay, that was what that was the main food choice. And so these 17 women, they said, okay, research people, what do you have in mind? They said, well, we want to try an experiment. And they said, well, what is it? They said, we would like to do what's called a fecal microbiota transplant. And that basically means they want to take a stool specimen or a fecal transplant. They want to take it from the skinny, healthy women, and they want to insert it into the obese women, and they want to see what happens. Now, personally, I think this should be the cutting-edge technology when it comes to treating these issues, because the other ones just don't work. And this would be cheap to do. I have never seen such a great weight loss study in my life. And I'm telling you, they didn't even say stop drinking Cokes, don't eat nacho cheese Doritos, stop eating ramen noodles. They didn't do any of that stuff right there. But it's literally the great loss weight loss study I've ever read. Now, let me tag onto that this right here. And this has to do with the microbiota. This is the bacteria that live inside of your gut. In the year 2007, there was a very interesting study where they took rats and mice that were bred genetically to be very, very lean. They just didn't hold a lot of body fat. It was hard to get them to, you know, gain weight. I mean, haven't you seen somebody go to the grocery store and they eat all the wrong things, but they're just as skinny as a rail? Their metabolism is super, super fast. Well, think about that when it comes to these lab rats right here. And what they did was, even though that there's nothing they could really do in the laboratory environment to make them, you know, gain a lot of extra body fat, what they did was they said, why don't we try taking and doing what's called a fecal microbiota transfer of very, very overweight American women, and we're going to transfer it to these rats. Well, guess what happened to them? Every one of them gained huge amounts of weight. I think you can catch on to what I'm getting to here. The bacteria that live in your gut, they have everything to do with how healthy you are and what your body weight is and your shape and your size and your dimensions. Also, inflammation. I'm going to get to the article that Linda sent me yesterday. It's truly amazing. Haven't read it yet, but I've looked at some of the charts in there. Okay, I've taken a stab at it. But I haven't read all 26 pages yet, but I'm going to. And so they did another study. I think this was done in 2006. There's a type of a mouse called an agouti mouse. And the reason why they're called agouti is every one of them develops mouse diabetes. Okay? I don't know if you know this or not, but diabetes is not going away in America. If we went back 100 years ago, it was way less than, it was like a tenth of 1% of the population that had diabetes. That ain't the case now. It's like huge, literally. And so there's a type of mouse that's bred to be genetically obese and overweight. You can't make them skinny. Unless you do what's called a fecal transfer from a woman that has a lot of good bacteria living inside of her gut. And so what happened in the study in the year 2006, when they transferred the gut microbes through a fecal transfer from a skinny American woman into a rat or a mouse that's bred to be fat, guess what happened to them? Are you kidding me? They all became skinny. I've never seen anything like it. This should be cutting edge technology. And you know what they threw into the study? They gave the rats junk food. They either said they fed them exclusively junk food either 3 or 4 days a week, which I kind of find is comical. Do you know what the treat that they use in most laboratories when they're trying to train a rat to work its way through the maze so it can receive a prize? You know what the junk food prize is? They use Fruit Loop cereal. And you would think they have to give them like a whole bowl full of it to make them work their way through the maze so they can time them to see how fast the rats can learn the maze and figure it out. They don't do that. They just take a Fruit Loop and break it in half, and that's all they use, half of a Fruit Loop. Now, the question is, what is it about that Fruit Loop that makes that rat work so hard for half a Fruit Loop? Evidently, it's got some chemicals in it, and it's got some junk in it that's highly addictive. Of course, you can use your imagination. You're probably saying, are you talking about Fruit Loop cereal available at the store? Yeah, I'm talking about Fruit Loops. Maybe they gave them nacho cheese Doritos, too. Who knows? Anyway, so yesterday, a lady sent me this article. And yes, I have. Let me just read the title of it. It comes from, what is the article? I think the article is from a journal called Microbiome. M-I-C-R-O-B-I-O-M-E. Microbiome. Microbiome. Okay, it comes from the journal biomedcentral.com. Just listen to the title of this article right here. Fecal microbiota transfer between young and aged mice reverses the hallmarks of aging in the gut, the eye, and the brain. Okay? Folks, this is huge. This is a big deal. On page 2 of the abstract, we have a nice colored graphic abstract. And what they're doing is they're showing that they take a young mouse, like a teenager, and they do a fecal microbiome transfer from the young mouse to the aged, super old mouse. And what happens? They become younger. And I'll get this. They do the whole thing in reverse. They take a very old mouse who's decrepit, been eating junk food probably, and they take a fecal transfer from the older mouse that's aged and got problems, and they transfer it to a young mouse. Well, what happens? The young mouse ages very, very quickly. I'm telling you, this is just huge. And which the punchline here is, what do you do to encourage good, healthy bacteria? Well, one of them is you've got to become comfortable with getting dirty. I know that's weird. Maybe it's called a control dirty. So, if you've got dirty hands, maybe you could use an olive oil-based soap and water only. Not antibacterial. I see people going into the stores, and they literally start the process of bathing their body and arms and face with this alcohol-based gel. Folks, you get to choose whatever you want to do, but I'm not doing that. You're not better off by killing all the good beneficial microbes on your skin. And plus, think of this. Something is going to live there. Yeah. So if you kill all the good, what are you inviting? You're inviting all the disease-causing bacteria to start growing. Which, okay, I realize, but if anybody can produce a study for me showing that bathing their body in alcohol gel, sanitizing gel, improves their health, please send it to me. I'll read it. Anyway, if you want to join me on the program, the number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I can accept your call, and I can get you right in, and we can discuss whatever's on your mind. And yes, I'm totally biased. I'm biased toward any system that creates health versus one that destroys health. So I'll let you decide what that is. 903-586-5257. You know, one of the problems with the I was reading an article. One of the problems with trying to send people to Mars is they don't think they can keep them alive because of the food. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Hello, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing so well. I'm so glad you called. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay, I need to ask you, I have a problem with...
Would you mind turning your radio down, please?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's all right.
Oh, my goodness, I didn't think... This radio is something I never deal with, so I know there's a echo, right?
Yeah, you're fine. You're good though.
Okay,
you did great.
To walk away. Okay. Okay. Anyway, I have an SI joint on both sides that are giving me problems, and I cannot sit comfortably for any length of time. is there anything? I go to the chiropractor once to twice a week, and I do take vitamins, but is there anything I can do for that? And I lay on the ice for about 20 minutes. I've started doing that twice a day, and that seems to really help. But is there anything that I can do that will help that? Because it's very, it's really sad when you can't sit for, you can't go and enjoy a meal with somebody. And especially women love to talk, you know.
What?
And
wait a second. Let me write that down real quick.
Okay.
This is like earth-shattering information. Could you tell me a little bit more about that part about women like to talk?
Okay.
Well, if you went to church tomorrow morning and the sermon was 2 hours long, that may push your sacroiliac joints to their limit, right?
I would be miserable. I would be hurting so bad.
Oh, bless your heart. Well, let's come up with a plan here. Now, I realize what I'm going to say may have come across as being very difficult, but just hear me out. If you know how you don't have any shoes on your feet right now and you're standing up and your feet are just very flat and on the ground?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what you would do is you would squat all the way down like you're going to stay flat on your feet. If you can do a full squat like that and hold it for 5 minutes a day, there's like a 50% chance your hip pain will completely go away.
Oh, my goodness. I'm afraid I'll cripple myself if I do that.
Well, hang on to something then.
It is so, even if I drop something and squat down to pick it up, it is so hard to get back up.
Well, and I'm not trying to be difficult, but we've got to find some way to get this to heal. So another way of doing that is if you can squat to the ground and maybe put your back up against the couch to kind of help hold you in place, why, sure, it's going to be very difficult to get up. You may have to, like, roll over on the floor and lay there for a while before you can actually get back up again. But if you can do a full squat, that is one of the techniques that I've seen work over and over and over again when it comes to chronic sacroiliac joint pain. Holding a full squat. And, of course, you don't do it 5 minutes the first day. It may be that you just hold it for 5 seconds and go, Dr. Morgan's crazy. This doesn't even work. But if you could do it faithfully, I think you'll tell me that your sacroiliac joints start to work a whole lot better. But that's actually one of the best, deepest stretches on the sacroiliacs.
Well, I always thought when I do anything that stretches it, I pull it out of joint. And then that's what
hurts. It's the job of your muscles to hold everything in its proper relationship.
And
But if you get down low to the ground and you can't get back up, that means your muscles are weak. And I'm not trying to fault you or criticizing you. One thing that I will use sometimes, if I test a person's sacroiliac joints as being very weak on both sides, I'll just give them fat-soluble chlorophyll, sometimes 6 gel caps a day, and ask them the next day, okay, how do your sacroiliac joints feel now? And sometimes that does it perfectly. I don't have to do anything else. Just give them chlorophyll.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, get that at the health food store.
Yes, that's one of the places you'd look. Now, do you, and I'm not trying to dig you for personal information, but how much stress are you under right now?
Not really any.
Okay.
I'm a widow. And I'm just a pretty happy woman.
Okay. That's good. So look at some chlorophyll and just look at, you know, if there was like a clothesline in your backyard, you might hang onto the post and try squatting down so you don't fall over. That's one thing. Or hanging on to a piece of furniture that was real stable. But you're trying to find a way to maintain that deep squat as long as possible. It will get easier because God has designed your body to adapt. You've heard the phrase, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Well, I don't want you to kill yourself.
No.
But it's the idea that our bodies are designed to have some stress to keep us in good working order.
Well, when I first started going to the chiropractor, this was 12 years ago or so, he gave me exercises to do.
Yeah.
And I did them, and every time I did, it pulled that joint out, and it just was so uncomfortable. And finally, he said, don't do that anymore.
Well, no, I respect what you're saying. Now, this is where I'm going to be philosophical.
Okay.
There is a gland that sits just atop of the kidneys. It's about the size of a large walnut. It's kind of triangular shape, kind of like a pyramid. It's called the adrenal glands.
Mm-hmm.
If the adrenal glands do not do their job properly, the net result is the sacroiliacs go out and can't stay in place. So somebody's got to be able to examine you. So if they can start examining the adrenal gland to see if maybe that's where the dysfunction's coming from, maybe that's all we have to do is just feed and nourish your adrenal, and the net result is you stop having the hip pain.
Okay. Do medical doctors do that?
They used to do that. When I say used to do that, there used to be a time that when a doctor would see a patient, he would say, Mrs. Jones, tell me what the problem is, and you explain it just like you did to me. He said, okay, let me think about this for a second. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do a Rogoff's test. I'm going to do a Raglan's test. I'm going to do the pupillary contraction test. I'm going to touch the acupuncture point for the adrenals at the lower inside the tibia beneath the knee. And they could go through all these, and they could say, okay, everything. And or he could use applied kinesiology to test the adrenals to see if they test strong or weak. But yeah, they used to. But I'm afraid what we've devolved into is we want to rely on machines to tell us everything. So if the CAT scan, the MRI, the X-ray, the lab test, if it can't tell us what the problem is, then we just obviously don't know what the problem is.
Mm.
Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that thinking is good?
Absolutely.
Do you think it's okay to have a challenge in front of you?
Right, I do.
Well, and so what I don't like is I don't like passing off our thinking and our problem solving to machines. And it's just almost a never-ending proposition. Years ago, I was at a seminar, and they were using what's called, maybe a Vega machine. And he said, here, hold these electrodes, Dr. Morgan. We're going to test you to find out what your problems are. I said, excellent. Let's do it. And after the test, he said, oh, man, you've got like a pancreas that's in such bad shape, you're not going to make it through the week unless you do something. And about 5 minutes later, I came back and I said, test me one more time. He goes, oh, no, we really don't do that. We just test one time. I said, well, you want me to buy the machine? They go, oh, yes. Well, test me again. Well, the second time they tested me, it was I had like a major bunion problem. And I'm going, I don't even have a bunion. But anyway, it's just that the electronic machine, it wasn't consistent from one reading to the next. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And that's just one example. So I'm trying to give you some ideas. And so what I generally think of, if both sacroiliacs are upset, then I've got to trace it back to where it's coming from. If it's just a joint problem, then I got to say, okay, is it because the muscles are weak and they're not holding the joints in place? That's entirely possible. Or is it because that you've had significant bone loss? That's another option right there.
That's probably true.
See, I know I'm kind of crazy, but I was reading in a journal from Czechoslovakia this morning where they were looking at women that had chronic hip joint pain in the sacroiliacs. Mm-hmm. And what they were using is they used magnesium lactate.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed how magnesium lactate helps stop the joint from hurting and from being in pain, which technically that's what chlorophyll is. Chlorophyll is magnesium. At the very center of a chlorophyll molecule, at its core, you've got a magnesium ion. So I know there's probably more than what I'm telling you. I'm just trying not to overwhelm a person with too much stuff. But they showed that these women became pain-free in their lower backs when they took magnesium. And technically, magnesium may end up being a whole lot more important than calcium is when it comes to strengthening the bones and getting bones to grow.
All right. Well, how much magnesium would you take?
Well, in this day, they used between 400 and 800 milligrams.
Or twice a day?
I don't know. It didn't say. Okay. It just said they used between 400 and 800. So if you want there to be 100 milligrams for the next 8 hours, once an hour, that's fine. I didn't read that far in the... What now?
It's not going to hurt you.
Oh, no, it's magnesium. No.
Okay.
Can I tell you the worst possible scenario? You could have to go to the bathroom and maybe have an extra bowel movement or two.
Okay, that wouldn't hurt.
Now, if I was trying to sabotage somebody, like for example, when I used to run track in high school, my mother would make a batch of cookies filled with X-Lax chips instead of chocolate chips.
Goodness.
That way, when I wiped out the competition, I could win first place in the 400 meters. I'm joking about that. That's just a joke. No, but magnesium is one of the most... it's got to be nearly the greatest deficiency of minerals in the American.
Magnesium.
Well,
and somebody was telling me that the other day, but my doctor is just strictly medical. He's an older guy, and he doesn't know anything about.
Well, can I try to give him some credit, though? He's really skilled at prescribing, you know, fentanyl and probably aspirin and blood thinners, and that's great. Lovely. But, you know, I don't know what he knows, and he doesn't know what I know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you've got to have magnesium for the function of...
You're the second person that's told me that. Somebody told me that yesterday. You probably, and I thought...
Do you remember, wait a second, do you remember who told you? Was it a woman or was it...
Yeah, it was a woman in the chiropractic office.
There you go.
Not the chiropractor, but...
Well, you should always follow the advice of a woman. I'm here to tell you. And so...
And I thought, that sounds good. How much?
Yeah, and so you're looking at probably somewhere between 400 to maybe 800 milligrams a day. Now, in this study... They looked at all the different forms of magnesium, from magnesium citrate. That was the lowest on the rung, and magnesium lactate was the best. It was even better absorbed than magnesium glycinate. But whatever you get something and start benefiting your body right now.
Okay, I will.
And the prize is, I mean, you understand the weakness of radio. I can't put my hands on your sacroiliac joint and figure out what the problem is on the radio, but I'm trying to talk you through it so you can be pain-free. And actually... If you become pain-free, that is your ticket to going and doing and traveling and encouraging and helping and lifting up. And
I've just given up. I've been going on for a long time.
Well, and I don't blame you. It's kind of frustrating, especially when you say, what is the cause of my pain? And nobody can tell you.
Well, the chiropractor doesn't seem to want to talk much about things. And I wondered about that because I thought, well, he should know a lot of these things.
Well, and ask him if he knows anything about why you have chronic pain in your hips. And if he doesn't know the answer, don't give up. You just may have to go ask somebody else that does know the answer.
That sounds good to me.
Okay.
Okay. But just tell me again, now, what kind of magnesium?
In this study on women that had severe hip pain and osteoporosis, that was the basis of the study. They used magnesium lactate.
Okay. Okay, 400 to 800 milligrams a day.
I'm almost positive.
Okay. I will certainly try that.
Cross my heart and hope to die. No, I'm joking.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for your phone call. I'm sure it's helped other people also. Have a good day now.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, there's a phone line once again open, 903-586-5257. I don't know about you, but to me, that is impressive. If a woman is complaining, and this study came from Czechoslovakia, but if somebody's complaining of chronic bone pain, well, it just makes you wonder, what do we do to address that, to help fix it? In this study, it was magnesium. Good morning, and welcome to the program. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for your call.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to find out, earlier you were talking about the gut, and you were talking about the fecal, I can't remember what you called it now, but I wanted to find out, is there anywhere that you can go to get one of those?
Absolutely. They do this in medicine all the time. Here's how they do it. You go to the doctor for a routine procedure like, let's just say they want to scope your knee. And the problem is you develop a horrible infection and they put you on antibiotics. And the infection doesn't go away, so they put you on more antibiotics. And then you develop a horrible condition called Clostridium difficile or C. diff. You ever heard of that?
No, sir.
Well, there's a type of infection that you get to catch if you go to the hospital. It's called C. diff. And what you get out of it is you get a horrible diarrhea and you get dysentery and your bowels are upset and you start losing weight and you become dehydrated. So here's what they do. The most successful way to fix the C. diff infection is it's called fecal transfer. And what they do is they find a family member, somebody that you know and love and somebody cares about you. They say, are you healthy? And they say, yes. And so they transfer the... this study right here, I have it right in front of me. It's called fecal microbiota transfer. And they transfer it from a healthy adult to the one in the hospital that's sick with infection. And it works 95% cure rate within 24 hours. All because they implanted good, beneficial, healthy bacteria. But as far as that, I don't know of any other circumstance where they do this outside of a research facility like at a university where they're testing these things.
Okay.
But I am telling you the truth. 95% cure rate within 24 hours, which means we should probably just go ahead and skip the antibiotics. Well, it's just an idea. You go straight to the transfer. I mean, what would you think right now if you were laying in the hospital bed and you had projectile vomiting and diarrhea because you picked up an infection called C. diff while you were in the hospital?
Yeah, I'd be a little bit upset.
You'd be too exhausted to be upset. You'd say, I'm about to die. And so, no, to the best of my knowledge, there's no clinics, but one of the purposes of the program today is, what can you do to help? Well, if you go outside and play in the dirt, that helps right there. If you eat fermented foods, that helps your gut also.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
This week, I had a lady come to see me that had a case of vaginosis. I don't know if you know what that is.
No, sir, I don't.
It's just a infection, sexually transmitted disease of the female reproductive area.
Okay.
And she was telling me this drug that the doctor had given her was really messing her up. I mean, these are just her words. I'm just repeating her. And she said, Dr. Morgan, this drug has such horrible side effects, I can't take it. She said, is there anything else? And I said, well, I have to play dumb sometimes. I say, well, I don't know, let's look it up. And on my laptop, we pulled up this article that came from a medical study on treating vaginal infections, and they were comparing the drugs that she was talking about versus a substance that's found in nature. Now, I'm going to put you to the test. When baby Jesus was born, there was a star that guided the three wise men that came toward the baby Jesus. Do you remember what the gifts they brought the Lord were?
Yes. Frankincense, myrrh.
Myrrh, that's it. And that was what the study was based on. They showed out of all the things that they tested to help clear out toxic bacteria, it was myrrh.
Wow.
And we just laughed at it. And I said, okay, that's what we're going to go with right there. And, of course, I tested her. But what you got to do is, myrrh is a substance that encourages getting rid of all these toxic germs. You know, sometimes bugs can live in your body in stealth mode, meaning you don't really know that you're totally sick, but you don't quite feel right. Have you ever heard of somebody having Lyme's disease or somebody having Epstein-Barr?
Yes.
And they're just,
yes.
Or chronic fatigue syndrome, and they're going, I'm so exhausted, I can't get off the couch. Well, one of the things you have to think about is they have an overgrowth of some type of toxic germ in their body. But in this medical study from Iran, that's where it came from, they just used myrrh, and they used it very, very successfully. Well, there are some people that just take myrrh only on the weekends as a weeding protocol.
Okay.
So you got to feed your lawn or the bacteria. That means eating onions and avocado and taking pomegranates and green tea. Even dark chocolate's been shown to be very high in what are called polyphenols. But these encourage the growth of beneficial bacteria. See, as your doctor, I demand you eat onions, garlic and chocolate all the same day, and drink green tea and avocados. If you don't go for guacamole today, you're in big trouble, sister.
Well, ever since COVID, I did get COVID last September.
Yeah.
Really bad. I had it pretty bad. And then I got it again this January. And this January wasn't as bad. But ever since, I have not felt good.
No,
and your level is completely dumped.
No, you're in the category of a long hauler. That means you've got all these symptoms that are hanging on for dear life long after the disease is over. And that's real.
Right.
And so you've got all these things going on. We need to start addressing that. Like, what are we going to do? Because you got to have energy. There's no way around this. If you want to be able to live your life to the fullest, it requires energy. But also, they've done studies and they've shown that there's like this altered gut microbiome in those long haulers. That means they've got too much toxic, not enough good. So that would be a good thing for you to prayerfully consider.
Okay.
Okay. Well, that would surely, I pray that helps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very.
Your phone is breaking up. I cannot make out what you're saying. I'm so sorry.
Okay. I'm so sorry.
No, that's all right. It's
I'm
just
traveling, so.
No, and that's fine. I hope your chauffeur has a good attitude.
I'm trying.
Oh, you're trying?
I am the chauffeur.
Well, you might have some precious cargo there in the car with you. No, this is good. So thank you so much for your phone call. I really appreciate it, and I'm rooting for you.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things I was pointing toward, if you have tons of good beneficial microbes that live inside of your gut, they do a great job of crowding out all the toxic ones that are growing. Does that make sense? Hello, this is Dr. Morgan. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I have a 2-year-old. Let me turn my radio down.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
I have a 2-year-old great-granddaughter, and she's constantly has a runny nose, and yeah. It doesn't seem to be green or anything, but it's just constantly running. And I wondered if you had any ideas on that.
In a child that age, it's either, and can I just ask you simply, how many rounds of antibiotics has she been given?
I think several, but I don't know for sure the amount.
Well, when you start having that age.
She does have ear trouble.
And one of the things I was going to say is there's always a possibility that maybe she's got an allergy to something like milk. And kids that age, if they develop a dairy allergy, it usually manifests as ear trouble or the nose keeps running or they have allergies. Does that sort of make sense?
Yes, and I think she's has taken away a lot of milk.
Has?
Yes.
Oh, good job. So. What a great mom she is. She's trying to help her baby.
Yeah, I guess she's one of those research people. So.
Oh, I like her already then. That means she's real curious and she wants to know what the best thing is.
I kept her yesterday and her little nose was just a running,
I think it was a newsletter from the Sloan Kettering Clinic that said that if you're an adult, it wasn't looking at kids, but it said if you're an adult and you have chronic stuffy nose and sinus problems, they're finding out now that most likely it's just an overgrowth of fungus in the nose.
Hmm.
And so if it never goes away, so you got to consider that. And so what do you do with fungus? Well, number one, you don't feed it. And so I'm not trying to be cruel here, but you wouldn't give a 2-year-old like lots of fruit juice and lots of candy and lots of cake and soft drinks. It would just cause the fungus to grow.
Okay.
And so if it's not a dairy allergy, we might look at an overgrowth of some toxic. So you might even look at giving the little kid a probiotic to see if that starts to help her quite a bit. I mean, this is just my opinion, but I say run toward healing the body with good stuff. So that's your choice. So a probiotic might be something that would be really, really good for her. I mean, if she comes up to you and she says, what does she call you, by the way?
Mimi.
Mimi, she says, Mimi, I want some fresh bubby sauerkraut. Probably not going to happen. But you could probably give her like some goat yogurt.
Okay.
And you could give her a probiotic mixed up with that.
Okay.
And when you go out in the yard and you pick your blueberries in a couple months or in 1 month, you don't wash them off.
Okay.
That way we get those good microbes. Does that make sense?
Okay. It does make sense.
Okay. Well, let me know how it works out, please.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.